and welcome to the third episode of Do I Have Your Attention? For all those who might be joining late, this is a show aimed at interviewing all your business owners, public leaders, public servants, anybody who's making tactical and strategic decisions in the city you live in. The first city we're focusing on is Phoenix, of course, so another interview in Phoenix will be for this session as well. This is a quick conversation, but a very, very interesting one. And we will continue to have weekly episodes that release every Thursday. In this episode, we talk with Eileen Sigmund, the former president and CEO of the Arizona Charter School Association. It was a really good conversation. I think a lot of people coming in to any kind of conversation around education, especially lower education, confused charter schools. I myself had that confusion or thought it was its own entity, but it's actually just public schools ran by private entities, right? The interesting thing about Arizona that she highlights in her conversation is this idea of choice that not every principality has. Arizona allows you to be able to choose where you want to send your child instead of having to be locked down by the address or the zip code. This conversation is very interesting. We learn a lot. I get to talk a lot about not only education, but Eileen's background in several different fields, mostly surrounding government and how it affects the community and people in general. So once again, thank you to all the viewers who viewed the last two episodes. Thank you to all the viewers who are going to view this episode. Hopefully you enjoy it. If you have any comments, as always, contact us on any of our social media pages or email me directly. But sit back, enjoy, and let me know what you think. Thank you. All right. Good morning. How you doing today?
Good morning. I'm doing excellent.
So I would like to start off. Can you introduce yourself and kind of talk about what you do?
Sure. My name is Eileen Sigmund, and I am the former president and CEO of the Arizona Charter Sector. I had that position for nearly 12 years. I finished up in December, just a couple of weeks ago. And before that, I was a litigator here in Arizona. I handled both civil litigation, and I was a prosecutor prosecuting child abuse and child homicides. And before that, I was a journalist.
So. Okay.
Yes, and I was a lobbyist, too, between her and the position in Arizona. I was a lobbyist, and I was a registered lobbyist the whole time I was head of the Arizona Charter Schools Association.
Okay. So let's start off with the Arizona Charter School Association. As we were talking about before, it's a relatively new education system. You've been there for quite a while. What would you say would be the difference from when you started and now, and then where do you see kind of the future of the system looking like?
Well, when I started with the Arizona Charter Schools Association as president and CEO in 2007, it was the first time the association had a full-time professional team. And the goal was an advocacy goal. With my background as a journalist, litigator, and lobbyist, they were wanting to build an advocacy organization.
Okay.
So when we first moved in, I and the team of outside lobbyists and my school leaders were working on what needed to be done, and a lot of what needed to be done was more parity in the law. For example, the nonprofit public schools that are charter schools were paying property taxes, and that was not where it needed. That's not where the dollars needed to flow. So we changed a bunch of the taxing laws, the zoning laws of where they could locate, quality of the charter schools was something that outside influencers wanted us to focus on. So about 2011, when I was there for a couple of years, we started to build a team to increase the quality and help schools with professional development and looking at student strengths and weaknesses. And we built out that organization, which we called Center for Student Achievement, because a couple of districts wanted our team too. And meanwhile, we were looking at ways to help meet demand because thousands and thousands of parents wanted to get into charter schools, but there was simply no room. So we looked to receive startup grants from the federal government that only a few states were awarded, and Arizona started being awarded these federal startup grants, allowing the charters to grow and meet the growing demand.
Okay. And then now, as you kind of are phasing out, what have been some of the things that you guys are working on?
So certainly, charters were created in Arizona to improve student achievement and provide families with a choice.
Okay.
Charters are now outperforming the district schools in every grade, and both English and math, and they've been doing that for the last 4 years on the state tests. And then on national tests, which is the nation's report card, if charter schools in Arizona were their own state, our eighth graders would be in the top two for both math and reading.
Okay.
And then finally, the spread of schools is much wider than many other states, because charter schools are located in all 30 Arizona legislative districts. So choice is available.
Yeah.
Not only by bricks and mortar schools, but also online schools.
Online.
Right.
Okay. And then the application process, is it based on where you're located, or is it based on need-based? How is the system built?
So the application process is through the State Board for Charter Schools. Mm-hmm. They are the main authorizing entity, and that is a state agency. And the application process is, it's usually a two-year preparation process to open a school, and it happens, you apply in May, June timeframe, and then you find out in December. So last December, just last month, mm-hmm. The state board, the state agency, authorized new charter schools. And that was a day-long procedure. Okay. So there's still a growth, there's still a demand, and the quality is always something that charters really existed. But as is anything, as charters are approaching their 25th year, there's going to be improvements to the system. Now that there are 20% of the students, there will always be improvements.
Okay. And then, so then, what would be some of the things you guys are looking to do in, like, the next 5-10 years?
Well, so I'm no longer leading the organization.
Yeah.
So I would really defer that to the new leader, because my goal was to increase seats and increase quality, and we did that. And now it's going to be up. There's a strategic plan, but it's up to the next leader in 2019 to implement what they want to see moving forward and what our school leaders want.
Okay.
I mean, it is an association made up of school leaders, and listening to their voice is very important.
Education as a whole is a hot topic in America. Do you have any kind of insight on any of the movements that are happening, like the teachers' movements, student kind of movements?
Well, I grew up in Virginia, so I'm licensed to practice law in both Virginia and Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And so I probably study those states pretty closely. And Arizona is very interesting in that choice is fundamental for parents. Your zip code is not your destiny. And this is true with district schools, too. So both public charters and public districts allow choice. So you could live in Yuma and attend a school in Flagstaff, whether it be a charter or a district.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that is a freedom that parents here almost take for granted since it's been 25 years, but is not happening in other areas of the country.
Case.
Yes. And then certainly what you do see on the movement I'm watching in Virginia is the Red for Ed movement is moving. Chicago had a teacher strike. L.A. Certainly we did here last session. And making sure that that educators are able to meet the demands of their students. And that's something that really caught a lot of support. So we'll see what happens moving forward. I mean, I've been reading and watching and seeing, but what Arizona really needs to be proud of is the fact that every family has the right to choose the best public school for their student.
That's awesome. Yep.
Yeah.
No, I grew up in Colorado, and it was definitely a zip code thing.
Right.
And even when they did in, like, the 60s when they started busing in to get kind of a change of demographics. It was still specific areas and like one or two buses.
Right.
So I understand that standpoint. I am interested.
I saw that in Richmond, Virginia too, certainly.
Yeah. And growing up, right, in school, it was never a situation where my teacher was like, I'm not showing up to class, or I felt like the students were just unhappy. Would that be something that you experienced growing up in school?
Well, I mean, I'm first generation American.
Yeah.
So, for me, school was the opportunity to move forward. So I didn't, my happiness was irrelevant to the fact that I had an immigrant parent who was basically, school is your, pathway.
Yep. Okay.
And it really, I mean, my brother went to West Point. I mean, there was a strong motivation that you move, and use, whatever opportunities you can to bring back to the family.
No, that makes sense. Play the cards you're dealt. Where I was going with that is, do you think that it'll have an effect on kids and ultimately the workforce maybe 10, 20 years from now?
I don't know. My kids are 17 and 19, and they're motivated. And so we know right now in Arizona that there are many jobs that are not fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a concern. But we also know, if you look at Dr. Matthew Ladner's study, he's now with the Arizona Chamber, but he wrote a report, I think it was 2 years ago, that basically said in all but six states, the amount of retirees are going to be greater than the numbers in the workforce, and that the ends of the spectrum, under 18 and over 65, we're going to be needing reconsideration, because the way we've always educated students is something that we need to rethink, because brick and mortar sitting in your desk is not the way the world is operating with technology.
Yeah.
And to rethink how can we reduce the cost of education with less people paying for it, but still a need for public education. So. Yeah, so it's an interesting report, and just the changing demographics will of course change our workforce, and the changing work being more technological.
Okay, well, and then to that point, how do you feel that play effect? Like, what do you think will look like in terms of the transition from lower education to upper education, right? Colleges, universities,
right?
Whether people choose public, charter, private. How do you think that will play out?
Well, certainly the K-12 education needs to prepare students for post-secondary, because the workforce is requiring more post-secondary, whether it be Universal Technical Institute and trade schools or community colleges where trades are learned, or a four-year institution. But if any of the studies from ASU, from Achieve 60, AZ, they are all showing the need for K-12 to prepare students for some sort of post-secondary. And the need is like 60 to 70% of the workforce will need that.
Yeah. So do you think the colleges and universities will bulk up those levels of programs, or do you think it kind of shrink down into more specific trade schools?
I mean, you're seeing it with ASU. Our colleges and universities are responding to that demand, as is Maricopa County Community Colleges, the largest community college. I mean, they're trying to be innovative and thoughtful to meet and partner with different industries to make sure that there's a seamless transition between the education and the workforce. So you're seeing that. I'm trying to think of some of the I know Universal Technical Institute has partnerships with different car manufacturers, so you go through Universal Technical Institute, and then you automatically are have jobs that are ready for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's happening throughout the different higher education spectrum. So Achieve 60 AZ would have a lot of examples on that.
Okay, and then just thinking about Arizona in general, what kind of excites you about the future of businesses, people, lives in Arizona?
Well, Arizona being state 48, the 48th state, we're so young and we're so innovative, and we really don't see obstacles, we see opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So what excites me is certainly the leadership of the state, We're very bipartisan, and we work together, and we address problems, and we get them done. And then also the unique land opportunities and outdoors that we have here, we preserve it, and we enjoy it. And so that's what I think it's just it's a state of optimism and opportunity. And I felt that for the almost 25 years that I've lived here. And it's been wonderful. And I just don't think people should be negative. I think they should see whatever problems they're facing as opportunities to solve. And I think that leadership here does that, political leadership.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talking about growing up, right, first generation, when you were younger, what would have been an experience or thing you would have wanted to gain if you were following somebody, either in your shoes, right, if you grew up and did the thing you wanted to do, or let's say you wanted to be an astronaut, right. If you would have talked to an astronaut, what would have been some of the things you, questions you would have asked?
So if I had a role model that I was following, what would I have asked them? I think I would always ask about their values and how do they make sure they stay true to their values, whether it be family or taking care of themselves, taking care of their family, or taking care of their community. How do they make sure that they prioritized and lived each day instead of allowing outside pressures to dictate their day? So in other words, how were they very deliberate in what they did, instead of being swayed by external forces? And you can't always control that, but it's something that I'd always want to make sure. I mean, I remember I had a 500 religion class in college, and there were some really tough questions that we all had to grapple with, but you have one life to lead, and you just want to make sure that you look on it as something that when you look back, you're not regretting. And you're not indifferent about, that you take control.
Okay.
So, and so that's what I'd ask people, and I have asked people that.
Okay. To that point, right, you're saying you're transitioning out of your old role. What's next? Mm-hmm. What are you interested in doing?
that's interesting. So certainly it's only been a couple of weeks. And I'm lucky that I do have some mentors that I can turn to. But what excites me is Arizona. And what in building the Arizona Charter Schools Association, it didn't exist. Mm-hmm. We built it to a $3 million organization with almost a year's worth of reserves, almost $3 million reserves. So that was a solid business that we were built, my team, the leaders, everybody we built. And I realized what... And it made a difference in people's lives in Arizona by building something. So what I'd really like to do is help others, almost be like a chief of staff to somebody who is building a business that will enhance the reputation and the lives of Arizonans. That's what interests me. But I'll see. I mean, it is definitely a I've never stopped working since I was 15, and my husband would joke at me that I like to work, and so he doesn't think I can really take some time off. But I really do want to try to take some time off, because I have, you know, another decade plus, I have a long stretch ahead of me, and I think that's what's really exciting, is when you can tell that you're in a state that allows innovation, entrepreneurship, and opportunities for all, how can you contribute to building that? That's what excites me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then also attached to that, what would be some of the kind of misconceptions you've encountered with as you were building these businesses and working in your past rotation?
Well, I mean, certainly that charter schools are not public schools was a huge misconception. So many people believe that they're private schools. Even I did when I was first approached about this position. I asked if they're private schools. And the reason that is because they're public schools run by independent companies. And so that's one. But I think the other misconception I would want to fight is that Arizona is somehow stalled or not a land of opportunity, because I think the pathways and roadways ahead are bright, and that we have the energy and workforce mm-hmm. to make amazing, amazing changes that will originate here and impact the world. And I think our not only our K-12 sector, but our university sector, our community college plus the university, are all going to be contributing to building workforce for people. And that's what it's about, I mean, is the opportunities and choices, and then to also enjoy our beautiful lands, because that's what I'm getting ready to do, is take some people on a outdoor hike on some trails they've never been on, and that's exciting. So, yeah, I mean, that we have in the middle of the city all these pathways that you can mountain bike, ride, horses, run, or hike is just an opportunity. And then South Mountain is the largest municipal park in the country.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many people take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So. I went off path a little bit.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. I actually live right near South Mountain. So.
Do you get out there at all?
Yes. Yes. I was there this weekend. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what do you like about it?
About Phoenix?
Uh-huh.
So I love the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
I love the weather. I love, to your point, I do a lot of stuff outside, like play tennis, hike, mm-hmm. all that type of stuff. So I love that. But more importantly, I was very aware of the opportunity that's here,
mm-hmm.
just from the standpoint of they're building so much, real estate's going the way it's going. So that's
people
more
are moving here.
Yeah, that's more what I'm intrigued about, and seeing if it meets demand, because I kind of watched that happen a little bit in Colorado,
mm-hmm.
right? Now it's for a different reason. There was a different pusher. So that's more what I'm trying to see, how the city will meet the demand for that.
Yes, and the mayoral election will be interesting. But the other thing is, I don't know if you saw the story in the Arizona Republic, it was probably a couple of weeks back, that if you rent a U-Haul from Phoenix to, like, L.A., it's like $90. But so many people are moving to Phoenix that from L.A. to Phoenix, it's like $700. So U-Haul trucks reflect how people are really wanting to move here in Maricopa County.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting. And then the growth that's looking outside with Microsoft and Bill, I think it was Bill Gates purchased out in the West Valley,
mm-hmm.
not Microsoft. And then just to see what else is going to happen. Are you thinking for opportunities like light rail? Is that what you're thinking about?
Everything, right? So South Mountain, right, they have the proposition for the light rail to come
right.
down there.
Which will narrow the streets. Yeah.
Narrow the streets. But it also make it easier for people to purchase who are looking to get into downtown, right? And not
mm-hmm.
drive, not park, all that type of stuff.
Which would be great in the summer.
Yeah. What do you think the form of technology will play in the city over the next 10 years?
Well, I think that that Phoenix, especially, is always looking for opportunities to improve what they offer for their citizens. And in full disclosure, I used to work as outside counsel
okay.
for the city of Phoenix. And so I've watched them closely. But I do believe the leaders there are going to be innovative. Whoever's chosen will be innovative and responsive to citizens. And I think also the citizens of Phoenix are not going to be silent about what they're asking for. So it'll be interesting to see with the light rail what happens there, and then how the city council responds. And then it has a strong, it has a strong city council, it also has a strong administrative staff who's constantly looking to meet the needs of their citizens. But if you reach out to your city council person, you can get a meeting with them. That's great. I mean, they just listen.
Yeah.
So, and they're doing a series of forums around the city on light rail. And then I found out, I don't know if you just saw this, for recycling. Actually, I have somebody going through your recycling bin and leaving you notes if you're doing it right or wrong. So I think there's a lot of a thoughtfulness of not only transportation, but how we're filling our landfills, how we're being responsible for our environment. So
yeah,
that's good. And then also the county supervisors. Andy Kanasik was a former county supervisor, and he built that Maricopa County Trail. Have you seen that? Which is a continuous trail.
Yeah.
And it took him about 15 years to really make that a priority and get it done. And it just opened.
Yeah. And to your earlier point, being a young city, we don't have to redo a lot of stuff like Chicago and some of the older cities.
The zoning, right? So that's done in Chicago?
Yeah, if we make the right decisions earlier, right, then they're kind of grandfathered in to lead to the right foundation for building better stuff. But
right, and there's like mixed-use zoning. I mean, you go to South Phoenix, there's all mixed-use zoning there. And now the West Valley is really Grand Canyon's changing the West Valley. So you can't really say I'm going through a bad pocket of Phoenix without saying, oh, this is bad, but this is good because of our mixed-use zoning. Yeah, it's great. It's great. And then I hope people look at it as a young place where they can build what they want to build. It's going to take hard work, but what doesn't?
Yeah. No, I understand. Talking about Grand Canyon, ASU, as more of these colleges kind of invest in the city, create bridge programs, all these type things, do you think that cost of education will kind of go down? What do you think their strategy might be in terms of the benefit there?
Well, I saw the Arizona Chamber's legislative priority was going to be to reduce the cost of higher education for those that qualified for DREAM Act. So, and I know Grand Canyon and ASU really prioritize scholarships for those in need. I paid for my own college and my own law school, and I think that there's opportunities for scholarship and working and getting it done. So I think that the cost of education is, while it may be a barrier right now, that there's actively looking for opportunities to solve those barriers, and the leaders are committed to it. Brian Mueller, who's head of Grand Canyon, has made numerous statements along those lines, and as has Declan or Michael Crow, and then can't forget NAU or U of A.
Yeah.
But it may not happen in 4 years. It may be 6 years. But, those problems are real, and they exist. And I think there's a lot of people that are putting their time and attention to try to solve those.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we know, I mean, as Glenn Hammer, who's head of the chamber, said, we have more jobs than we have workers to fill them. So we need to be looking innovatively to fill the jobs. So the work gets done and the economy continues to grow. And taxes are paid to pay for public schools.
One more question.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody was to shadow you, what would be the thing you'd want them to walk away with? What?
Well, right now, having some time off is a luxury that I'm blessed to be able to have.
Mm-hmm.
But it's where my focus has always been is you're going to be good in the workforce if you take care of yourself. So you need to know how to get your night's sleep, exercise, and eat right. Because you've got those, if you're sleeping well, you can function better. So I think right now, because I'm taking the time off, I'm doing a lot of just taking care of not only myself, but my family and my friends. So right now they'd see me traveling to visit friends that I sort of lost connection since I was consumed the last couple of years with working and had let some things go. So that's where they'd be. And if they'd be with me, they'd see, you know, there's a 5:30 a.m. boot camp at Dreamy Draw Park. Get to experience that almost every day. horseback riding on Squaw Peak.
Yeah.
I have a friend that has horses about 3 blocks, and he needs somebody to help ride them. They get to experience that. Mountain biking out there. So, especially since the snakes are hopefully still hibernating. Because once summer hits, there are probably weekly encounters. So,
yeah.
That's why I try to do a lot of the mountain biking during the winter months. So that's what they'd experience now, and had they seen me before, they would have seen me working with my team or working with our school leaders or and just trying to ask a lot of questions to figure out what was feasible to solve their problems. that's the way we would always do things, is go around 550 charter school leaders and go around all over the state and say, what is your problem and how can we help you fix it, and what is a reasonable way to fix it? Because some issues were not going to be reasonably fixed.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you have it. That concludes the end of our third episode of Do I Have Your Attention? Like I said, I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation. As always, if you have people you think I should interview, if you have questions, you have concerns, recommendations, feel free to hit us up on any of our social media pages. That's DIHYA_talks on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I always appreciate anybody who tunes in. Thank you for the listens. Thank you for the shares. And I'll see you next week. Thank you.